Thanks, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Rob Schuler, and I represent the appellants, the Columbus Catholic Diocese and Bishop James Griffin. If I may, I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my argument for rebuttal. This is a case in which Bishop Griffin and the Diocese of Columbus bought and paid for liability insurance to insure them in the event they were alleged to be negligent.
You really have narrowed this issue down to a very, about a one-sentence proposition, and I'd like to get right to it because you've got to make me understand what the distinction is. I'm saying these people were not insured under the policy.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
The policyholder is bringing, the action has been brought against the policyholder, therefore the policyholder is entitled to the defense because there has been no intentional act by the person who's insured under the policy.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
No act by an insured that caused this. How can there be any liability on the insured?
No intentional act on behalf of the insured that caused this. The claims in the case clearly were that there were negligent acts on behalf of the insured that caused this.
It did.
No, Your Honor. It actually happened at Pikes County, Wakefield, Ohio, at the Good Shepherd Manor. That's where the allegations were alleged to have occurred.
That's why it falls under the Columbus Diocese.
Exactly. The facility was within the geographic region of the Columbus Catholic Diocese.
That distinction, the type distinction you're making,
absolutely, Your Honor. Indeed, that distinction arises out of the Cuervo case. In Cuervo, this court did deny insurance to a negligent insured which sought coverage for an injury which arose out of the intentional acts of another insured. The court did so because the language of the underlying policy dictated it. That is, the policy in Cuervo, like many liability insurance policies in this country, contained an exclusion for injuries which arose out of the intentional acts of an insured. In Cuervo, it was undisputed that all of the injuries for which plaintiff sought recovery arose out of the intentional acts of an insured. In that case, it was the son who had committed the acts of sexual molestation. Consequently, the policy in Cuervo provided coverage for no one, not even an insured against whom only negligence had been alleged. In this case, there is no allegation against any insured under the diocesan policy of intentional wrongdoing. More importantly, there is no provision within the diocese policy which would exclude coverage for injuries which arise out of the intentional acts of uninsured third parties. And thus, there is the distinction between this case and this court's prior decision in Cuervo.
And your other argument that follows from that is that the policy of the law that is stated in Cuervo, you know, people could insure against intentional acts, that the policy here doesn't apply to, the policy of the law here doesn't apply to this policy as a relationship.
Absolutely, Your Honor. There are two reasons, and only two reasons, in which an insured who's complied with all the terms of his or her policy may be denied coverage. And the first is because the underlying policy simply does not provide for or excludes the coverage sought. The second potential reason is there exists an overriding public policy of such importance that the sanctity of the party's contract is set aside and coverage for the alleged acts of the insured are denied as a matter of Ohio law. Absolutely, Your Honor. If this case involved allegations in which there was an insured under the diocesan policy who had committed an intentional wrongdoing, the diocese policy would not provide coverage. In this case, the diocese did have within their policy an exclusion which excluded coverage for injuries which arose out of the assault and battery of an insured, by an insured, or by the direction of an insured. So if an insured had committed these acts, there would be no coverage. But in this case, there was never any allegation whatsoever that the Diocese of Columbus or Bishop Griffin intended or expected the injuries that were sustained by the plaintiff, John Doe.
There's some step missing between those two steps, and we haven't yet gotten it straight. From the two alleged culprits here, all the way to the diocese, why were they not insured under the policy?
They were insured under the policy, Your Honor, because they were not employees of the Diocese of Columbus.
Then if they're not employees of the Diocese of Columbus, how can Columbus be liable?
We argued that at length at the trial court, Your Honor. We submitted three motions to dismiss, two motions for summary judgment. The motions to dismiss were denied. The motions for summary judgment were never ruled upon. The argument, I will tell you what plaintiff's argument was, Your Honor. Plaintiffs argued in the case that while they were not employees of the diocese, that they were still agents of the diocese. They argued that that Bishop Griffin, as Bishop of the Columbus Diocese, had the right to control their activities under Roman Catholic canon law. And there was a dispute over that issue. We had an expert which indicated that the bishop did not have the right to control their day-to-day activities. They had an expert which indicated under Roman Catholic law, the bishop did have the right to control their day-to-day activities. And that...
It's only under canon law? I mean, did the bishop have the right to control a maintenance person at the facility?
I can conceive of no potential argument why the bishop would be able to, other than through his, perhaps, if again, I'm making plaintiff's arguments for them, Your Honor, which I opposed at the trial court level, but...
We need to have that.
Sure.
Staff.
Well,
I think the reason for the question is the briefs don't tell us what the relationship is between the diocese and Brother of Man. Can you tell us, is that in the record?
Sure.
It's very brief.
Very brief.
Can't find it there. What was the relationship?
The relationship between the diocese and the bishop on the one hand, and the Little Brothers of the Good Shepherd on the other, and they were the individuals who were running and managing the Good Shepherd Manor, was the Little Brothers of the Good Shepherd were a religious Roman Catholic order. Their headquarters were in New Mexico, and they had approached the Bishop of the Diocese of Columbus back in the 1950s, I believe, and asked permission under Roman Catholic law if they could come into the diocese and start their services, which this order was known for providing services for the mentally retarded across the country. And so they came within the Diocese of Columbus, and there, as plaintiffs alleged in their complaint, and Your Honor, I would direct the court's attention probably to plaintiff's amended complaint, because in there, probably more than anything else, you'll get a flavor of what the allegations were as to the relationship between the Diocese of Columbus and the Little Brothers of the Good Shepherd. There's a number of things in there that were accurate. Clearly, they were required to ask permission to come within the Diocese of Columbus to begin with. They pointed to a number of other factors that the Bishop of the Diocese of Columbus, and it wasn't always Bishop Griffin, but his predecessors, would visit the manor on a regular, almost annual basis.
Did the Diocese or the Bishop exercise control over these? Did they have authority to exercise control over these?
Two separate questions, Your Honor. With regards, did they exercise control of the brothers? They did not. Could they? That was the issue at the trial court level. Their canon law expert said absolutely they could. Clearly, and again, when... I'm sorry, Your Honor. Plaintiff's canon law expert indicated in his opinion that they could. Our canon law expert indicated that the bishop had the right to control certain activities of the brothers in that they were Catholic brothers within the diocese, but he could not control their day-to-day activities.
They really had probably their control was exercised from New Mexico.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. They had, there was a head of the Little Brothers of the Good Shepherd who exercised that type of control. one of the facts that became, when the allegations of sexual abuse first occurred at the manor in 1985, Bishop Griffin, when he became aware of them, and this was after the authorities had already become involved, Bishop Griffin contacted the head of the order in New Mexico and demanded that the brothers be removed from the manor. And so there were facts which suggested control. We were clearly faced with that. We filed a motion for summary judgment. The trial court ruled on a number of other motions for summary judgment, but never ruled on our motion for summary judgment. As the case progressed towards trial, and with the significant damages that were involved in this case, ultimately we settled the case with the plaintiffs. Your Honor, going back to one of the points that I made at the outset of my argument was that there are only two reasons for which an insured who's complied with all the terms of his or her policy may be denied coverage. One is because the policy excludes coverage or doesn't provide for it in the first place, and the other is because of public policy. With regards to the policy that was at issue in this case, the contract clearly provided coverage for the type of claims that were asserted against Bishop Griffin in the Diocese of Columbus. The policy provided coverage for liability which would be imposed or agreed upon against the diocese, which arose out of an occurrence. An occurrence was defined as an accident, happening, or event which unexpectedly and unintentionally results in injury.
That's the indemnity provision. What about the defense provision? To provide for defense even if the claim is frivolous and...
No, Your Honor. This policy, the way it read, defense costs were provided ultimately if there was liability under the policy.
If the trial court had gone through and not settled, the trial court would determine that the brothers were in fact agents, would that faction kind of agency have made them insurance
for
the policy?
No, it wouldn't, Your Honor. The allegation of them being agents, in fact, both Interstate and Lloyd's had a specific section in their motion for summary judgment where they argued specifically that the Little Brothers of the Good Shepherd were not insureds under their policy, and Interstate's policy referred back to the provisions in Lloyd's policy. So,
what theory if they were agents, why were they not insureds?
And I don't have the provision in front of me, Your Honor, but the insureds were specifically defined in the policy as the Diocese of Columbus, as specific institutions, and as employees of the diocese, if I recall correctly. And it was, no one argued that they were employees of the diocese.
Would you concede that if they were found to be insureds, that
the Yes, Your Honor.
And again, if they are found not to be agents,
if they would have been found not to be, there was some other theories that were set forth in plaintiff's amended complaint, Your Honor. We never placed much credibility on those theories. They had a breach of contract cause of action. They had a breach of statutory duty claim against the diocese and Bishop Griffin. Their primary claims were claims of agency and negligent supervision and negligent hiring. And if ultimately this case had gone to trial and the trial court had concluded that they were not agents of the Diocese of Columbus, Your Honor, in my opinion, then there would have been no liability against the diocese or Bishop Griffin.
Where is the underlying case?
The underlying case, Your Honor, was settled.
That helps a lot.
Was it... they also sued the order?
They did, Your Honor.
That was settled?
No. That case, let's see. That was settled out. The way I read Ohio law, in order for us to settle with the plaintiffs and preserve our right against our insurance company, one of the things we had to do was make sure the entire case was settled. And so the right, absolutely, Your Honor. And so the entire underlying case was settled. There was a separate proceeding that went forth with regards to coverage issues involving the little brother that's a good shepherd, but they were separate and apart from.
That's what I was
The entire.
If you prevailed today and that wasn't
in the right way, you could have a whole other set of...
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I don't believe any of those problems exist. If I could real quickly, I'd like to just address the two arguments that were in Gearing and Cuervo. One was the public policy argument. And I respectfully submit that public policy argument has absolutely no bearing on this case. In fact, public policy actually favors existence of insurance coverage in this case. As this court held in Harrison versus Normandy Metals, public policy favors the existence of insurance in cases in which there has been no deliberate conduct alleged against the insured, as this case. I see that my time has expired, and unless there are any questions, I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Cliff Mash. I'm here on behalf of the Apelli Interstate Insurance Company. Your Honor, before getting to the heart of the issues here, I think that there are some facts that this court needs to be cognizant of. Number one, this is not a duty to defend case. Interstate was an excess insurer. The underlying primary insurer provided a defense under a reservation of rights. The ultimate case was settled as between on behalf of the insured with the primary carrier making a settlement, the terms of which are not known to me, but my understanding is it was a settlement on a compromise basis.
The underlying carrier both defended and indemnified.
Defended under a reservation of rights and on a compromise basis helped fund the settlement. After the settlement of the case, the appellant then brought the current action against Interstate, the excess carrier, seeking to collect payment from Interstate to fund its settlement with the plaintiff in that case.
You mean its portion of the settlement?
Its portion of the settlement, that is correct. So we are not concerned with, as it relates to this case, an obligation of a duty to defend. We are only concerned with an obligation to indemnify the actions of this case. Your Honor, I would submit what this case really brings to the forefront is how the insurance companies and the insurers in the state of Ohio are going to define occurrences, the events which trigger coverage under insurance policies. Now, it's the position of the appellant that in order to determine what's an occurrence, you look at what's the theory pled in a complaint. They said since a claim of negligence was pled, that's a separate occurrence from the claim of the intentional sexual molestation. And that is a position of the appellant is such that should trigger a separate and distinct analysis of the occurrence of negligence under our policy. We submit that the position is based on the language of the policy, based on the law of Ohio, and based on the application of insurance law in Ohio in all contexts, including duty to defend cases, you don't look at how a case is pled in order to determine an occurrence. You look at the event that caused the injury.
Well, you would look at how the ultimate liability question would rest. It might be improperly pled. We have liberal rights to amend the pleadings. So is it your contention here that the bishop is really on the hook in this case, or was, until settled as a respondeat superior, or is the legal claim for which there was some risk of jeopardy, negligent supervision?
It's my contention, Honor, that in looking at the definition of occurrence in this policy, which is an accident, a happening or event, or a continuous or repeated exposure to a condition which unexpectedly or unintendedly results in bodily injury. That's the definition of occurrence. Under that definition of occurrence, when you're determining is what event created the occurrence in the policy, the event was the sexual molestation of John Doe. That's the occurrence. In any case, there can be numerous claims that can come out of a single occurrence. In the context of the duty to defend, the law in Ohio is clear that when you've got multiple claims arising from an insured occurrence, the carrier has the obligation to defend all claims, covered or not covered, until it can prove, until it can get those the covered claims out of the equation. So that benefits the insureds in this state to have a broad, to to have a separate analysis for claims coming from insurers. If this court is going to turn and adopt the proposition of the appellant, that is, the theory of a liability constitutes the incurrence, that would mean in this case there were 20 occurrences because there were 20 theories of liability pled against the appellant in this case. That's going to be that would allow carriers in the context of a duty to defend to say, well, the separate occurrence involving fraud, the separate occurrence involving sexual molestation are not covered incurrences. We don't owe you a duty to defend in those claims. So it actually could impair the rights of insurers if this court is going to determine how a claim is pled to determine what in fact is the occurrence. I submit that the better proposition, and it's the proposition that's been applied by this court in determining the timing of an occurrence. When this court and the courts of Ohio look to what's the timing of the occurrence, they look to the time of the injury.
The policy covers an occurrence. Is this what you're saying? The policy covers an occurrence. This was an occurrence. It was the occurrence that was brought about by an intentional act, therefore not.
The policy covers an occurrence. The occurrence in this case was not an occurrence as defined in the policy because it is sexual molestation of a minor. This court in Gearing, Cuervo, and Kett determined that sexual molestation of a minor as a matter of law cannot be deemed an occurrence in a liability policy. That's correct, Your Honor. And the reasons for that in this case is, number one, the definition of occurrence in this case doesn't link the expectation or the intention to the standpoint of the insured. That's not in the definition of occurrence. The definition of occurrence is, again, an accident, a happening or an event, or continuous repeated exposure to conditions which unexpectedly or unintendedly results in injury.
Let's change the facts here. Occasioned by the same individuals was an occurrence involving negligence that dropped some patient. Coverage?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's coverage. If the occurrence is negligence,
for the bishop,
that there would be coverage. But
even though the bishop has now no negligence supervision, but if they sue the bishop, there's coverage.
Yeah, again, my point is, Your Honor, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Even though there's no allegation of negligence against the bishop, they're just coming after him as respondeat superior. That's fact.
I think my point is, Your Honor, is that I don't care, and I don't think the court should care in determining coverage under an insurance policy how claims are pled. Because in today's world, claims are always pled in the alternative, and you can expect claims to run the gamut along everything.
So do I understand you correctly? You're saying that there can only be one occurrence, and that occurrence in this instance was the intentional acts of the brothers.
I'm saying in this instance there was only one occurrence. There can be situations where you have multiple occurrences, but in...
And I'm only talking about this.
Yes, absolutely.
So we do not, even though the intentional acts were not done by an insured under this policy, you're saying that we do not look to the acts of the bishop or the diocese, which are purely negligent. We just simply look at what's behind the occurrence. We ignore that the real occurrence with the bishop and the diocese is alleged to be negligence. We ignore that occurrence.
Again, I don't think the law of Ohio is that in determining what is the event triggering the occurrence and the insuring agreement is how something is pled. I think the appropriate analysis, a determination of the cause of the injury, and from that multiple claims can come out.
Well,
Multiple claims could come out. And in this case, the occurrence, beyond any dispute, the cause of injury to John Doe was sexual molestation. There can be no other conclusion than that. Sexual molestation.
Your argument has hinged on how courts discern what is the occurrence in terms of policy construction. That sort of obviates the more specific issue here, that the argument is if the policy, even if the policy does cover it, even if it were an occurrence, the case law, your argument is the case law and public, based on public policy about the intentional sexual molestation of minors precludes coverage. And those are two very different issues. The public, if you were going to public policy, if we examine Cuervo and Guerin, those cases relate to not permitting. Public policy seems to me to have been decided that courts don't want to be parties to allow the person who commits crimes against, molestation crimes against minors, courts don't want any financial burden removed by virtue of insurance for that particular act. And that isn't really the issue here. Public policy wouldn't preclude the bishop or non-participants. Is that the, preclude, the thinking doesn't preclude funding a settlement?
I understand your question, Your Honor, and I would beg to differ. I think the public policy still exists, even in this situation. And number one, it's important for this court to bear in mind that in Cuervo, this court did exactly what we're asking it to do here. The claim in Cuervo was against a son who sexually molested some kids babysitting.
Cuervo, that argument doesn't really hold water, because in Cuervo, it was the father who was an insured. In other words, the family had one policy.
Correct.
Excluded coverage where the act was intentional by an insurer. Therefore, if an insurer, here the son, commits the act, the dad's policy doesn't trigger anything for him.
Yeah, I understand that argument, and I would respectfully disagree with the representation that the policy in Cuervo applied to an insured. If you look at the appellate court decision, it said the insured. All of the case law that's been cited by the appellant in trying to manufacture that distinction deals with policies that reference an insured. The policy in Cuervo said the insured. So
both the father and the son would qualify as the insured.
That's correct, Your Honor. But that makes no difference, because again, what the court did in Cuervo was it said, based on Guerin, this is not an occurrence under the policy, because under law, sexual molestation of a minor cannot constitute an occurrence under a public liability policy. And then the court went on to say, talking in terms of the father, because the damages sought to be obtained against the father, and this case, the Cuervo case, involved an identical situation. There was a judgment in place, and the insured tried to enforce the judgment against the carrier, as the appellant in this case is doing. And the court said, because the damages sought to be recovered against the father flow from the sexual molestation of the minor, they too are uninsurable. That was the Cuervo's decision. And I would respectfully submit that the public policy all equally flows with that. The public policy that was articulated in Guerin was sexual molestation is such a heinous crime and so vividly against all sense of morality that we are going to draw the line here. This is sexual molestation.
Where do we draw the line? Do we draw the line at the individuals who are the molester? Molesters, or do we draw the line all the way to, as the Court of Appeals call it, claims of negligence flowing from intentional action? And I'm still having trouble with the public policy concept for that, even if the court did.
Sure. And the reason why I think the public policy makes a connection with the type of claims that we're dealing with here is because, again, in the indemnity, in the indemnity arena, in order for the appellants to be liable to John Doe, it would have to be established in a court of law that their actions t- to some degree, and as much as we'd all like to believe it would never be proven, but it would, in order to collect against them, that their conduct facilitated by either hiring, training, or supervision, facilitated the uninsurable act of the sexual molestation of a minor. And I think the public policy fits on all fours, even in that context. We're dealing with an uninsurable event as a matter of law in the state of Ohio.
Let me ask you what your response is to this. You know, the appellants in the reply brief argued that the definition of term occurrence in this policy is broader than it usually is. It includes other events such as happening or events potentially exposure. And that brings in that, I take it that the argument is that brings in that the negligent conduct of the alleged negligent conduct of the diocese. We don't have to look to the occurrence, the act of the perpetrators as the occurrence, but that there can be other occurrences. What's your response to that?
Yes, Your Honor. I understand that argument, and I think it really is it's without basis, because their argument is because our definition of occurrence goes to things other than accidents, that all these cases that we're relying on are really not applicable. And I would submit that that's incorrect, because under the definition, you've got three things that the policy defines can be part of an occurrence. It can be an accident, it can be a happening or an event, or it can be a continuous exposure to the same repeated conditions. Regardless of any of those three, all of those three have to result in unexpected or unintended bodily injury. In the Hybud case versus Sphere Drake, this court, in defining what accident meant, is it said an accident is an unintended and unexpected event. So regardless of which one of the definitions that the appellant is trying to seize on, it all boils down to they're all going to be submitted to that unintended or they're going to all have to result in unintended or unexpected bodily injury. And because they're one and the same, it really makes no difference. It's a difference without a distinction. Your Honor, I see I've run out of time. I hope I've addressed all the questions. And again, I would respectfully request that this court basically affirm its holdings in Cuervo and Gearing, and that any claims which flow from an uninsurable act of sexual molestation is uninsurable under Ohio law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Real quickly, first and foremost, the very policies that were involved in this case have been involved in other cases in which Interstate has taken a position on what the term occurrence means. Those cases involved identical allegations that the insured negligently hired and or supervised someone else who committed acts of sexual molestation. In both of those cases, Interstate admitted that its policy provided coverage for those type of claims. What Interstate's argument was in those cases was that it was not it's not whether or not those claims triggered an occurrence. It was whether they triggered one or more than one occurrence. I see that my time has expired. I would ask the court to reverse the lower courts and remand this case for a trial and damages. Thank you.